Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to hear a case challenging how congressional district borders were drawn for Wisconsin in 2011. The case revolves around the practice of gerrymandering, in which a political party that controls the process draws the lines to favor that party. A U.S. district court has ruled that the Wisconsin legislature, which draws the lines, violated the First Amendment and the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment by favoring the GOP. A recent Associated Press analysis found that gerrymandering has helped Republicans gain majorities in Congress and in many state houses. Associated Press correspondent David Lieb conducted the analysis. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be with you, Ann.
And for listeners, we did invite a representative of the Wisconsin Attorney General Brad Schimel's office, who said the Wisconsin's redistricting process was entirely lawful and constitutional, and that the district court should be reversed. He was unavailable to join today's show. So, David Lieb, the AP looked at 435 U.S. House races and about 4,700 state House and Assembly seats up for election in 2016. What were some of the big takeaways from the analysis?
Right. So what the AP did was use a new statistical model for analyzing partisan advantage in districts that are drawn around the state. And as you mentioned, we ran it both for U.S. House races and for state House races across the country. And in the big picture, for state House races, we found four times as many states that had a Republican advantage in their districts than a Democratic advantage. And for the U.S. Congress, we found about three times as many states with a Republican advantage when you're looking at those roughly two dozen largest states that comprise the vast majority of the seats in Congress.
You just did it for the election in 2016. Is there any sense, though, going back in history about how the maps in 2016 compare to, say, 1916?
Well, yes, although maybe not all the way back to 1916, but certainly over the past four decades or so. The AP modeled its analysis on an approach developed by a law professor at the University of Chicago named Nick Stephanopoulos and a researcher at the Public Policy Institute in California named Eric McGee. And although the AP looked only at the 2016 elections, those two individuals had, as part of their research, looked at elections over the past four decades from the early 1970s up till about 2012 or so. And what they had found is the maps drawn after the most recent round of redistricting in 2010 contained what they described as some of the most severe partisan gerrymanders in history.
Does this look like a concerted effort? I mean, we know there have been books written now about how at the national level, the Republicans were working on this at the national level to affect lots of states.
Yeah, and gerrymandering is actually something that's been done by both parties,
right,
Democrats and Republicans, over the years. What this analysis does is it puts a number to it as opposed to anecdotal evidence. Oftentimes people can look at a map and they can look at a district and say, well, that one sure looks odd. You know, it looks like a dead animal or something. That looks like it's been gerrymandered. But what this analysis does is actually puts a number, a statistical way of trying to determine if there is actually more partisan advantage for one party over another. And if there is, that can provide an indication that gerrymandering may have occurred.
And what did the gerrymandering yield for Republicans in 2016?
Well, you can take this analysis and with it you can come up with a projection about the number of excess seats that a particular party gained. And when you do that for U.S. Congress, what it shows is that Republicans may have gained as many as 22 additional seats over what would have been expected in districts if they were drawn according to a purely balanced partisan manner. So if you take those additional 22 extra seats, Republicans still would have had a majority in Congress, but it would have been a much more narrow one than what they have right now.
Now, the case that's going before the United States Supreme Court in October, the case out of Wisconsin, that has to do with congressional districts or state assembly districts?
The case before the Supreme Court has to do with Wisconsin state assembly districts. So this same analysis can be applied either way. But
okay,
the general thought goes, if the U.S. Supreme Court were to uphold the lower court's ruling in the Wisconsin case, that it could usher in a new factor for states to have to consider when they're drawing legislative district boundaries, both for state house or assembly races and for congressional races.
What about the argument, and I'm pretty sure the plaintiffs in the Wisconsin case have made this argument, that Democrats just happen to tend to live in urban areas and that that accounts for districts' disparities. What role does that play in the factoring that you looked at?
Well, that does play a role. In the political world, sometimes it's called geographical clustering, right? The tendency for Democrats to live more concentrated together in big cities and for Republicans to be a little more spread out in suburban areas and rural areas. And when you go to draw district boundaries, well, sometimes it's hard to divide the Republicans and Democrats evenly just based on where they live. So that does come into play. And so in our analysis, you may have a state that has a relatively slight Republican advantage. Some of that may be due to that geographical clustering. But what the creators of this efficiency gap analysis have said is that there reaches a point when, if the score is at a certain level, that it suggests more than just basic geographical clustering. It suggests some intentional drawing of the lines to create a partisan advantage.
There have been rulings on gerrymandering or how district lines are drawn in the past, but those have revolved around racial line drawing, right?
Yeah, and generally in the past, in court cases, there are two ways that gerrymandering claims are brought to the court. And the most common we see right now has to do with racial gerrymandering, and that is accomplished in one of two ways, usually. If you have an African-American community, perhaps they try to divide that community by spreading its residents out among multiple districts, diminishing the possibility that they could elect someone of their choice. Or perhaps they pack them together in one really highly concentrated community, essentially giving them one district where they could elect a representative of their choice, when perhaps if they'd spread them out a little more evenly, it might have been two. So the Supreme Court has been ruling on racial gerrymandering cases as recently as this year and last year. Another common case that gets brought before the courts, it has to do with unequal populations. So the courts have ruled that you have to have districts of roughly equal size. And if you pack one district with a whole bunch of people and leave another with a smaller amount of people, that's unequal representation. And they've been striking those down, too. So what's new about this case is it focuses on partisan gerrymandering. That is, drawing lines purely for the benefit of one political party versus another.
What did the AP analysis show about Ohio and other battleground states in the last election?
So the AP looked at Ohio both at the state house level and the congressional level. I'll talk first about Congress. So Ohio had an efficiency gap score of 10%. That doesn't necessarily mean anything on its own if you're not into those numbers. But what it translates to is that Republicans gained an estimated 1.6 seats beyond what would have been expected. In other words, Ohio sent one or maybe two, depending on how you round that number, additional Republicans to Congress compared to what would have been expected based on the average vote share in each district. Now, that ranked around 10th or 11th in the country, and it puts Ohio in that category of contributing toward that extra Republican advantage in the U.S. House. If you look at the state house level, Ohio also had a efficiency gap score that was favoring Republicans. Again, it was ranked in the top 10, comparable to states like North Carolina and New Hampshire. In this case, it was not so large that it would have affected the majority of Ohio's House. I mean, Republicans have a roughly two-thirds majority there, and they're going to have a majority regardless, but it would suggest that maybe, you know, around five seats or so of those might have been attributable to this partisan advantage stemming from the way districts are drawn.
Now, in Wisconsin, Republicans took over the assembly, state assembly there in 2010. But in Ohio, Republicans have controlled the General Assembly, gosh, since the early 90s or so. Does that make a distinction worth noting. I mean, in other words, Ohio has been chipping away. The Republicans who have controlled the process, both at the congressional and the state house level, have been chipping away at the seats and the and how they're dispersed for, you know, 20-odd, 30 years. Does it make a difference? Does that factor, that efficiency gap analysis, take into consideration how long a party's controlled the state house?
The numbers do not take into account how long a party's controlled it. And in this case, the numbers do not suggest that Republicans would be a minority if only the districts had been drawn differently. Mm-hmm. No, Republicans are likely to be the majority in Ohio, particularly at the state house and at the congressional level. But what it suggests is perhaps over the years, as they have been in power, they've used that power to sort of firm up their control, to ensure that it's maintained.
Because once you're in office, you not only hold the power of incumbency, but you also hold the a greater power of fundraising. And I know that wasn't the purpose of your analysis, but there's that, the ramifications are, go the, in those directions.
Right. Our analysis didn't look at fundraising, but obviously there are perks that come with power. And one of those is the ability to be in charge of drawing of district boundaries.
Are there any instances in the AP analysis of advantages for Democrats who've controlled the redistricting process? Because as you pointed out, Democrats have taken advantage of this in the past, and certainly, although not to the extent that it has occurred in the last 30 years, but before that, Democrats controlled in Ohio, and it was clear in the how the lines were drawn.
Yeah, there is. And one good example of that is Maryland. Maryland has, on the congressional level, an efficiency gap score that is around the same as Ohio's, maybe even just a little more tilted toward Democrats. And in Maryland, Democrats have 7 of the 8 congressional seats. And much like Ohio, the analysis suggests that if things were equal, if the districts were drawn according to sort of a better partisan balance, that perhaps Republicans would have one additional seat there. Again, Maryland's a pretty Democratic state. No mm-hmm. one's going to suggest that Republicans should be holding the majority in Maryland. But again, what it shows is that when a party is in power, it has the ability to control the way the districts are drawn, and the drawing of those districts can help that party remain in power and perhaps even increase its hold on that power.
In Ohio, state legislative seats are drawn by a board that consists, or a body that consists, of statewide elected officials and then representatives from the House and the Senate. In when it comes to congressional seats, the legislature draws those districts, then they pass a bill enacting that. Is that the same way it is in every state?
It varies by state. And to start with Ohio, my recollection is for state legislative districts, that is drawn by a commission, but I believe Republicans had a 4-to-1 majority on that commission.
Right, because they control every statewide elected office.
Right.
They control everything. But right, so does
so it... in other states, in most states, the legislature is responsible for drawing the seats for Congress.
For Congress, that's a federal thing.
Fairly, yeah, federal thing. That's pretty much the norm. You give the state legislature the ability to draw the districts for the U.S. legislature. There's a little more variation when it comes to state legislative districts. Other states do have commission structures, like Ohio, but some of those states that have commission structures intentionally set them up with a greater partisan balance. I know in Missouri, for example, they have a commission, but it consists of an equal number of Democrats and Republicans. In California, they have a commission that draws their seats, but it is a much more independent citizen-led commission as opposed to being composed of elected officials. And so there are different ways to draw these, and some of those ways can result in less partisan influence. California, for example, which adopted this independent commission structure after as a result of a ballot measure right around the time of 2010 or so, the AP's analysis showed that the efficiency gap was actually fairly close to zero in that state, which means it was had a pretty good partisan balance, pretty much representing the way the votes were cast.
We are talking about how congressional and state house district lines are drawn. It affects how many Republicans and how many Democrats are in the Ohio General Assembly and how many represent the state of Ohio in Congress. Right now, out of, I think it's 16 seats, 12 of the seats are controlled by Republicans. Yes, there are a lot of Republicans in Ohio, but not that many. That's a result of how the lines are drawn. My guest is David Lieb. He's an Associated Press correspondent on the state government reporting team. And he did an analysis of the 2016 election and looked at 435 U.S. House races and about 4,700 state house and assembly seat races up for election in 2016 and looked at where how the lines fell in those races. We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the process of gerrymandering and how it favors political parties and why that matters. The U.S. Supreme Court will hear a case challenging congressional district borders drawn in 2011 in Wisconsin to favor Republicans. A recent Associated Press analysis found that gerrymandering has helped Republicans gain majorities in Congress and in many state houses. Associated Press correspondent David Lieb conducted the analysis. He's still with us by phone. Joining us is Chief Policy Analyst for Common Cause Ohio and Coordinator of Fair Districts Equals Fair Elections Coalition, Catherine Turser. Welcome back.
Hello and thank you.
An election law expert and professor at the Moritz College of Law at Ohio State University, Daniel Tokashi. Daniel has supported reforms in how congressional redistricting is handled in Ohio. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
Daniel Tokashi, the Wisconsin case could have a big impact on Ohio, right?
It could have a big impact on Ohio and indeed a lot of other states. This is by far the strongest legal challenge that has been brought to alleged partisan gerrymanders. This is an issue that the Supreme Court has been struggling with for over three decades.
What's the struggle over?
Well, the struggle is that on the one hand, I think just about everyone understands the problem. We have legislators drawing districts in a way that's designed to entrench themselves in power. You look here in Ohio, every one of our congressional districts in the last election was had a huge margin between the Democratic and the Republican candidate. The closest was right around 20%. These districts are drawn so that incumbents, and in particular incumbents of the dominant party, which here is the Republican Party, really don't have to worry about competition. In effect, the election is over before the election even takes place because the districts are slanted in such a way that everyone knows the outcome. And in the aggregate, this tends to help one party or the other. In the current cycle, it's helped Republicans a lot more, as the AP analysis that you've been talking about reveals. But there have been times and places where Democrats have been the beneficiaries of partisan gerrymandering as well. Whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, this is a problem. On the other hand, the difficulty and why the Supreme Court has struggled is that it's awfully challenging to come up with a legal standard that will separate out what's an impermissible and illegal gerrymander from one that's just the usual partisan politics. And the Supreme Court has been very reluctant to enter this field, which could result in just about every plan drawn by a state legislature being challenged exactly as a partisan gerrymander.
So a U.S. District Court has ruled that the Wisconsin legislature or assembly, I should say, state assembly, which draws the lines, violated the First Amendment and the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. What in the First Amendment?
Well, the argument is that this is a form of viewpoint discrimination that is prohibited by the First Amendment, and in particular that it violates the right of association, which has been understood as a part of the First Amendment for well over a half century. The basic idea, and this is supported by a long line of precedent, is that government can't discriminate against people based upon their political viewpoint, which is exactly what partisan gerrymandering does. It's effectively weakening the collective voice of the non-dominant party.
By either packing it all into one district or distributing it across several districts.
Exactly. And so look at Ohio, right? We're pretty close to a 50-50 state. Republicans have a slight majority in terms of the number of people who generally support Republican candidates, at least in most elections. But three-quarters of our congressional districts are pretty safely Republican districts. So in effect, the collective voice of people who support Democrats is weakened by the way those districts are drawn. And I think there's a very strong argument that that's a First Amendment problem. Justice Kennedy, who is the swing vote on this issue as so many other big issues that come before the Supreme Court, he suggested that partisan gerrymandering may be better understood as a First Amendment problem rather than an equal protection problem, which is how this issue has usually been addressed, including in the three cases that have come before the court since 1986.
David Lieb, one of the things that happens is when you're in a safe district, you only have to run in the primary. You don't have to bother running in the general election. Oh, you're running in the general election, but you don't have to worry about campaigning as much in the general election. And that has led to not only a potential distortion overall, but seat by seat, more polarizing, having a polarizing effect. Is that been the case in other states?
Well, it has. And one of the things that AP's analysis looked at was the percent of races that were unopposed in the general election.
Okay.
And by unopposed, I mean lacking a candidate from the opposite major party.
Mm-hmm.
Republican doesn't have a Democrat. Maybe they have a third party or independent candidate. Across the country, 42% of the state House races were unopposed last year in the general election. It's a pretty staggering high amount.
That is really staggering.
Ohio actually fared a little bit better. Ohio's unopposed percentage was about 27%. So despite the Republican advantage in your state, there at least has been some nominal competition, at least from Democrats in some of those districts.
Only nominal.
Yeah. Yeah, they're placeholders, right.
Yeah. Georgia, for example, 83% of its state House races were unopposed last year.
Wow. I was going to ask you what state stands out, and you just told me. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about gerrymandering today. Don't turn off your radio. It's very, very important to the political process and to the democratic process. If you have a question or comment, we welcome them. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ohio lawmakers overhauled and voters ratified in 2015 how Ohio's state legislative districts are drawn, but the congressional process was left out. Catherine Turser, why?
I think for most of us, we would think, you know, I don't want to play cards with somebody who cheats. And so it's pretty clear that, you know, we want to have fair districts so you have fair elections. It's pretty easy to understand that, in fact, if you wiggle these around in specific ways, and you talked a little bit about packing and cracking, that type of manipulation manipulates the vote.
And voters get that now.
And voters get that. And I think, you know, a lot of times when you think gerrymandering and you think, you know, that political cartoon that gerrymandering is based on is from 1812. And so clearly this is something that we have a long history. Elbridge Gerry, who was the Jerry in gerrymandering, he was a founding father who signed the Declaration of Independence. He was somebody who promoted the Bill of Rights. And yet when push came to shove, he cared about his party more than he cared about voters.
And drew a district that looked like a salamander.
Exactly.
Ergo the mander part of it.
And so fortunately for Ohio voters, we have had an opportunity to say, you know what? What we actually want are fair districts because we believe in fair elections. And in 2015, more than 71% of the voters passed state legislative redistricting reform. And so to get to your question, which
why
is like,
why
are we, you know, why are we still waiting? When you address the state house, you're only addressing the makeup of the Ohio state house. When you start thinking about making things fairer for Ohio, when it comes to Congress, you're actually talking about a congressional delegation. You're talking about actually changing the makeup possibly of the U.S. House. And it's a lot harder to do that.
Let me provide a bit of a realpolitik answer to this question. What's really going on here, right? It makes sense why the Republicans who, you know, let's face it, they control this state, were willing to do a deal on state legislative redistricting, but not congressional redistricting. And it has to do with how the districts are currently drawn. So under current law, as you mentioned earlier, Ann, we've got a board, right, which has been in the last cycle controlled by Republicans, that's responsible for drawing district lines. Well, nobody knows who's going to win these statewide offices that effectively control the composition, that is governor, auditor, and secretary of state in 2018. It's quite possible that Democrats will win two of three of those offices, which would give them control of the board. Therefore, there was an incentive for Republicans in Ohio to cut a deal, but that same incentive didn't exist for congressional districts because of gerrymandering. Republicans can be very confident that they will control both houses of the state legislature in 2021 when the lines are drawn. So there was really not much of an incentive for them to do a deal on congressional redistricting as there was with state legislative redistricting.
And then it just happened to turn out that Democrats lost in that race. They didn't gain any control on the board and lost their chance.
Yeah, but the point is looking forward, right?
Yeah.
It's possible that Democrats will control the board in 2021. It is not possible that they will win the state legislature in 2021. Therefore, Republicans had an incentive to deal on state legislative districts, but zero incentive to deal on congressional districts.
The other thing I keep thinking about as you were talking about that had to do with the fact that we have term limits. When you start thinking about, okay, what's going to be happening in 2021, 2022, it could be that a lot of those folks are not having to worry about that because they'll be term limited out. Mm-hmm. Now, we know that there's a bouncing back, I call it the musical chairs, but for many of them, there's like, oh, okay, well, this
You mean they go between the House
yeah,
and the
they
Senate,
go,
right?
Yes, it may not affect them at all. I do think it's very hard to give up power. It's very hard to say, hey, I'm going to care about the voters and I'm not going to worry about my party.
I mean, it runs against every instinct that someone elected to public office has.
There is an article written last week in the National Review in praise of gerrymandering to the point that it's been around forever. And this is written by Kevin Williamson. He writes, redistricting is not politicized. It is political. For the Democrats in the Supreme Court to try to step in and take away from the state legislatures their longstanding right to draw up legislative districts as they see fit is much more deeply undemocratic than anything Republican gerrymanderers ever dreamt up. But David Leib, there has been one big change in how all of this occurs, regardless of what human body is put together to do it, and that is computers, right?
That's right. Not only have basic Excel spreadsheets allowed us to do the analysis we did, but computers have become so powerful that they can simulate hundreds, even thousands of different alternatives for maps and do it really very quickly. And what that means is it can work both for or against gerrymandering. You can bet that the next round of redistricting in 2021, both sides will have access to those computers, and they will be able to draw districts with such precision that they can either make them balanced partisanly or make them not balanced partisanly.
What data do they use to draw those districts? Is it just who's voting in primaries?
Well, they do have that data, and in some states, that may be all the data they have. In other states, you also have party registration, which factors into that.
Mm-hmm.
But even beyond that, they can use some of the same data that we see out there in social media right now. Mm-hmm. If you know a lot about a person's preferences, the things they like, the activities they engage in, the experts have a way to predict how those people will vote.
So they even use, like, magazines, like what magazines come to your home to make a determination.
Yeah. And, of course, redistricting, as was mentioned by David, it's extremely sophisticated nowadays. And the best information of how people will vote is how they voted in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And we can pinpoint that down to the precinct level, exactly how people voted. So when people are – when these line drawers are drawing the lines, they can be pretty confident about how folks are going to vote in each of the districts that they're drawing.
And you don't get a district that starts, you know, in Toledo and works its way all the way over to Cleveland, jumps over a bridge.
The beachfront district?
Yes. You know, that sometimes is only as wide as 10 feet unless you're up to shenanigans. And, you know, pretty is pretty does. I think this is something that David on the phone had mentioned, too, that, you know, you can look at something and that is not the same as actually having evidence and looking at an efficiency gap. But, you know, when you start thinking about the damage that you can do, you know, with a computer that we would never have thought, you know, back in Elbridge Gerry's day of the kind of crazy shenanigans that we engage in now.
So the argument is made, David Lieb, that this is what our founding fathers intended. This is the way it works. There's this game changer with the computers.
There is that. But yet it still comes down to the court having to decide if this is something they want to wade into. Because once they open this door and say that partisanship crosses the line to being unconstitutionally partisan, you can bet that there will be challenges to almost every map drawn in every state by the party that's perceived to be the loser.
Real quick, Don in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Hi, Don.
Yes, I understand that the idea of gerrymandering has been around since 1812, but did it not have a big push shortly before the Civil War and come maybe into more full flower or something like that, have wider spread or something like that?
What, when they were making people two-thirds a human or...
Yeah, along with that, in parallel with that, I guess. But I know that just pertained to black people, so I'm not really talking about that. But just in general, did it come into more of a full-fledged operation?
Dan Tokaji, yeah.
Sure. Perhaps to some extent, but the real big changes in redistricting and in the extent to which the dominant party uses that power to entrench itself in power, these have come in the last few decades, in the last four decades in particular, with a quantum leap in the last decade because of the increasing sophistication of how people draw lines. And for those who take the position, and it's a position I understand, you know, gerrymandering has redistricting has always been political, and we've always had gerrymanders. True enough, but I'd ask people, how many folks out there really thinks that our political system is functioning well right now? There are precious few people who believe that. I mean, the dysfunction in our political system is obvious to everyone. And I'm not saying that gerrymandering is the only cause of that, but it's sure a big part of the problem.
Don, thanks a lot for that call. We'll continue our conversation. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the impact of gerrymandering in Ohio. We just heard from David Lieb. He's an Associated Press correspondent on the state government reporting team. They produced a project recently that looked at 435 U.S. House races and about 4,700 state House and assembly seats up for election in 2016. You can check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides if you want to read that for yourself. Still with us is Chief Policy Analyst for Common Cause Ohio and Coordinator of the Fair Districts Equals Fair Elections Coalition, Catherine Terser, and also election law expert and professor at the Moritz College of Law at Ohio State University, Daniel Tokaji. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you have a question or comment. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Let's just start with a question. Steve in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Steve.
I have a comment and then a question.
Okay.
The comment is one of your participants keeps on saying partisan gerrymandering. Well, there is no other kind of gerrymandering. That's the whole point of it. And my question is, why in the world would the Republicans not gerrymander given the opportunity?
I mean, yeah, that's what the whole idea is that there you control the game pieces if you control enough seats or enough offices.
So let me first address the question or the point, there isn't any other kind of gerrymandering. That's incorrect.
As
David was mentioning earlier, in addition to partisan gerrymandering, that is drawing districts to maximize the advantage of one political party, there have also been cases involving so-called racial gerrymandering, which is drawing districts in a way that overemphasizes race and that allegedly gives one racial group an advantage. So it's simply not true that partisan gerrymandering is the only kind of gerrymandering. As to the caller's second point, Steve's second point, that legislatures always have an incentive to draw districts in a way that maximizes their party's advantage, that's true. Although I think the reason why partisan gerrymandering has, in a demonstrable way, gotten worse over the last 40 years and especially over the last decade has a lot to do with the fact that partisan polarization has increased. You know, you look back 50 years ago, the political parties were a lot more diverse. We had conservative Democrats and liberal Democrats. We had moderate Republicans as well as conservative Republicans. Over time, the Republicans have moved to the right. Democrats have moved to the left so that there is very little common ground. And when you have that kind of polarization, boy, the incentive to draw partisan gerrymanderings of the kind we see today increases dramatically.
Steve, thanks a lot for that call. And Mason in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Mason.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, so it's similar to the last guy's question, but in my opinion, so like you're looking at the job of being, you know, a congressman. If you remove any threat of accountability, which would be voting you out of office, then there is no demonstrable value for fair redistricting then, right? Because, I mean, not only drawing lines to benefit your own party, but for self-preservation, right? And that's, in an argument, a basic human instinct.
Right. It's difficult to get some lawmakers who are Democrats and obviously the minority in the delegation from Ohio in Congress, right, to criticize the process. They personally benefit from it, Catherine Terser, because they have safe seats too.
So even though that is completely true, that when push comes to shove, it's very hard not to work in your own best interest, that's actually why we elect folks. That's why we have this type of system, is that the idea that these folks go down there to represent us, to represent our interest, and to think about the voters. And when I start to think about, the impact of gerrymandering, you know, you talked a little bit about just the sheer number of safe seats this creates. Mm-hmm. And the question really comes up at some point, you know, if the average margin in 2016 was 36 points. That in fact, the city
in the general election,
in the general election for U.S. Congress, you in fact have such safe seats that, you know, whether you have a year where Barack Obama wins or whether you have a year where 2012 or you have a year where Trump wins, that as a statewide office is either way, our congressional district is staying exactly the same seat. You create such safe seats that you actually don't have a functioning democracy because you can't hold these folks accountable.
Right. And the caller makes a really good point that if every seat is effectively a safe seat, we know whether the Republican or Democrat will win in advance. There's no accountability. That is exactly why there's very little incentive on the part of most people in elected office to change it, and why we have to change the incentives. And there are basically two ways that that can come. That could come through a ballot measure like the one that got enacted here in Ohio for state legislative districts, or it can come through the courts, which is why this case, Gill versus Whitford, that the Supreme Court will decide in the next term is so important.
And I think, you know, one of the things that for folks like me who think a lot about, well, how do we actually get to fair elections? How do we actually get to a much more functional democracy? Well, you know, we got tired of waiting on the state legislature to do the right thing, with understanding that it's hard for them to do the right thing. So let's collect a bunch of signatures. Let's do a ballot measure. Let's do what we can as citizens of the state of Ohio to collect signatures and change the Ohio Constitution to improve democracy. And so it's fairdistrictsohio.org where you can check out a little bit of information about what's we're actually proposing to put on the ballot. But the idea is that districts should be – there should, in fact, be a rule prohibiting gerrymandering. You can't draw a district to favor or disfavor one party or another, and that we should keep our communities together and do things in a much more transparent fashion.
Now, just to give it sense and take it a step further as far as how does this actually affect policy, something that's high on everybody's mind right now is what's going on in Congress over the Affordable Care Act and repealing and replacing it and so forth. And right now the Senate is mulling legislation. And one of the problems the Republicans who control the Senate narrowly have is that five of their members are wishy-washy on it. They need no more than two not vote for it or it won't pass. So they have five. And who are those five? They are people from competitive districts that are have to be answer to the voters is exactly who they are. There's others that are now saying they don't support the legislation, but those initial five are all people that could lose an election if they vote the wrong way.
Yeah. And
it does matter.
You know, it's difficult for a lot of people, including I'm sure some folks who are listening, to understand redistricting and why it matters so much. But I think the Supreme Court said it best in a decision that goes way back to the 19th century, just shortly after the Civil War. The right to vote is fundamental, the court said, because it is preservative of all rights. Whatever you care about, whether it's the environment, whether it's education, whether it's jobs, whether it's your right to bear arms, or whether it's health care, right? These interests are very affected by the way the voting process is structured, and there's nothing that is a greater threat to fair politics than the way that our district lines are drawn. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a political system in which there was actually an incentive for Republicans and Democrats in Congress to compromise on health care? Hey, look, Republicans have some good ideas there. Democrats have some good ideas. But there's very little appetite on either side for working out some kind of deal.
In the state, the country, there's only five Republican Senate seats that are competitive.
Yeah,
if you had 50 in the whole Senate, that would be a miracle.
Right. At least there's a chance in the Senate where people are elected on a state level. But in the House, forget about it.
Well, and the League of Women Voters of Ohio has done some really interesting research over the years. They call it predictable results. And they're basically able to say, as you look at the district line, the partisan makeup perfectly predicts the winner every single time for Congress. So Democrats elected, Republicans are elected. The same thing for the Ohio Senate. And it's only about 97% of the time predictive in the Ohio House. But just think about that. You know, we pride ourselves on being a democracy. It's time we're actually a more robust democracy.
What's happening, Catherine Turser, with the Fair Districts Equals Fair Elections Coalition's effort to put a similar initiative on the congressional line regarding congressional district lines on the Ohio ballot?
So we are out collecting signatures and talking to people all over the state of Ohio. You might be at a festival and someone will come up and talk to you about gerrymandering. It's kind of unusual to have somebody come up with a congressional district map and talk to you. But we're in that process of collecting signatures.
What are you shooting for as far as
the ballot? We're shooting for 2018 at this point. When you start to think about, you know, we basically have had just about 3 weeks. We're moving into about a month that we've had so far. Mm-hmm. We applied and had a period that the attorney general kind of slowed us down a little bit. And so we were but what we're going to be using this summer to collect those signatures, get out there, talk to voters. It's a wonderful educational opportunity, too, to talk neighbor to neighbor, friend to friend about, hey, what exactly is gerrymandering? Because, you know, anything that happens every 10 years behind closed door and is, let's face it, one of the wonkiest subjects going. Mm-hmm. It is very hard to get voters to say, oh, yeah, we definitely need to do something about that, even though we addressed this in 2017. In 2015. Sorry.
I remember.
So 2015. There we go.
I remember when it first struck me, I could have said, why does anyone care who the state auditor is? Well, most voters don't, but it's one of the seats on the board that draws the lines, or used to. Now that's changed. What's changed as far as how state legislative districts will be drawn, Catherine?
So what's nice about this is that Ohio voters changed the Ohio Constitution to add additional members. And so we now have what's called the Ohio Redistricting Commission, which is a bipartisan commission. It includes the auditor, the secretary of state, and the governor. And it then includes both the Ohio House and the Ohio Senate. They have a majority and minority appointments. And so Republicans and Democrats and both of those houses. And then there are some really good rules about, hey, let's keep communities together. Let's a prohibition on gerrymandering and the idea of fair representation, which very much mirrors the idea of let's look at the state as a whole. And as much as possible, let's have districts, you know, some districts will favor Democrats, some districts will favor Republicans. But as much as a whole, it'll look like the state.
But the Republicans still control. There's still more Republicans than Democrats on
depends
that.
Depends on who wins in 2018.
Well, it does, but let's say they stay where they win. All right.
The
so
big change
what's the
that's
protection
been made
then?
By the Ohio constitutional amendment that was adopted in 2015 mm-hmm. is that to draw a plan that will remain in effect for the full decade, you have to have some degree of bipartisan consensus. If you don't, that plan will only remain in effect for 4 years. Now, why is that significant? Think of it in terms of the incentives of those on the redistricting commission. They won't know who will actually control that commission 4 years down the road because there will have been another statewide election for governor, auditor, and secretary of state. Mm-hmm. So there's an incentive for both sides to get a deal done. We don't know for sure whether it will work, but there will be a greater incentive for whatever party dominates the commission in 2021 to work out some sort of compromise with the other side, because if they don't, there's the prospect that they could lose control and thus lose the state legislature 4 years down the road.
And then vice versa, if Democrats take over the board, then
there's, you know, it's all about incentives and creating some degree of incentive to compromise, which otherwise is very hard to find in this age of hyperpolarized politics.
And then I think the good rules of keeping the communities together will also mitigate some of the redistricting, you know, shenanigans, as you imagine all the weird little lines and things. If you have to keep a city together, you have to keep a township together, that makes it a lot harder to play games.
Catherine Turser, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Catherine Turser is Chief Policy Analyst for Common Cause Ohio and Coordinator of the Fair Districts Equals Fair Elections Coalition. We'll have a link to that on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Also, Daniel Takagi, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me in.
Daniel is an election law expert and professor at the Moritz College of Law at Ohio State. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.